Rates of sexual misconduct and assault in the Australian Defence Force remain essentially unchanged, despite years of scandals and reports and efforts to improve reporting and accountability, researchers say. And they're calling on the ADF to release more data to help make more progress. The ADF's Skype and Jedi Council sex scandals, among others, sparked multiple inquiries and pledges of zero tolerance. New initiatives were accompanied by measures to address gender inequity as well, moves echoed in militaries in other parts of the Western world. So how effective has it all been? A panel in Sydney this week will ask, when will the military have its Me Too moment? It's convened by Megan McKenzie, who's Professor of Gender and War at the University of Sydney, and retired US Army Colonel Dr. Ellen Haring, who was part of a major legal case against the US military policy on excluding women from combat roles. She has also testified to the US Congress about military sexual violence. Both women joined me in the PM studio. Professor Megan McKenzie, if I can begin with you, hasn't the Australian military had its Me Too moment after the scandals of recent years and changes implemented by the military after the Broderick Report?
Well, I think we thought that we had the Me Too moment in the military, not just with the Skype scandal, but also the Jedi Council, which followed soon after, and then the speech by David Morrison that went viral around the world. However, data shows that nothing has changed. In fact, incidents of military sexual assault have remained the same, and that there isn't a lot of internal change, the kind of change that we would want.
But still, the ADF, for example, implemented the Sexual Misconduct Prevention and Response Office. It says that is about providing a better mechanism for reporting and providing support. Has that not been effective?
So I think it's been effective in the sense that there's more resources for victims, which is always a wonderful thing to see. We've seen their number of clients go up annually, which is great for in the sense of those victims having a resource. It's not great as an indicator of the problem. It's not getting better from all indications, even from the limited available data that we have. So we have a sense of the problem. We still actually need better data.
Ellen Haring, you know the US experience mm-hmm. particularly well. Does it echo the Australian experience?
Actually, it's almost identical, except that we do have better data. That's one of the requirements that Congress has leveled against our military. And so we've been collecting data for almost 10 years now. And unfortunately, what the data is showing is actually the problem is getting worse, not better. And we can't, you know, some people have said, well, the reporting is going up because women and men who are sexually assaulted have greater confidence in the system. But we don't believe, those of us that care for and assist assault victims don't believe that's the case. We think that reporting might be going up because of the Me Too movement, and that, in fact, nothing has really changed except that the problem could potentially be getting worse.
You also worked on a major US legal case to overturn longstanding combat exclusion policies that kept women from combat roles in the US military. When those new doors open for women, when they're given access to things that they couldn't have before in the military, does that help to change the culture around sexual misconduct?
Well, that was our goal and still is our goal, is that women need to be seen as equals. And as soon as they're seen as equal, they'll be treated more equally. But we've just now opened those doors. Just like in Australia, it hasn't been very long. And the first women who are integrating are really fighting an uphill battle right now. So no, things are not getting better yet, but we hope that eventually the culture will change and you will see a change in the way women are treated.
Megan McKenzie, you say that there is still an excuse made for bad behaviour. Boys will be boys. That mentality persists, you say. But we have heard from the most senior levels of the Australian military, and I think we've heard in the US as well, that there is now a climate of zero tolerance. So how do you square that?
Well, the truth is we've had a zero tolerance statement from military leaders on average once every 4 or 5 years for the last 2 decades. So for me, the zero tolerance statement is empty. We don't have zero tolerance. And I think it would be interesting to think about what would it mean if we had zero tolerance. Would we kick out service members who are accused of assault or charged with assault? How would we deal with the problem if we really had zero tolerance? And I think it would be much different. And despite that declaration of zero tolerance, we still have, you know, narratives that, well, when you have young men and women together in close confines and adrenaline's running high, these are the kinds of things that happen, or these are the kinds of things that happen when young men get together and drink. Those still exist. And quite frankly, the public accepts them.
Ellen, again, is it similar in the United States?
It's absolutely similar. And it's funny to me to hear the United States try to exceptionalize our military and say, well, we can't be compared to, say, Australia or another country's military because we're unique, we're so much bigger. And in reality, it's just happening at a smaller level in other countries, but almost identical in terms of the narrative that surrounds it. And that's one of the things that Dr. McKenzie is working on with her lab, is analyzing these narratives across multiple countries.
And I'm curious to hear from both of you, because I know there's a lot of critiquing around what happens, what is the circumstance for women when they do try to have a career in the military. Megan McKenzie, what is that experience like? I mean, is getting in enough, or is that recognition enough, or is there support enough? I mean, what's it like for them?
Well, I think actually the experience of women in the military is applicable to those of us outside the military in male-dominated spaces, in the sense that we've known, feminists have said for a long time, it's not enough to add women in STIR or just open the doors. And in fact, when we integrate women into those kind of workplaces without cultural change, they face an uphill battle, they face sexism, they're pushed out. And they, as a result, the emotional, the trauma for some women, particularly in the military, is massive. So we're asking a lot of women to sort of take on the burden of integration if there's no institutional change that comes with it.
Sort of letting the institutions off the hook.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Ellen, what's the answer to that, do you think? I mean, we do need to add more women and we do need to stir, but what do we do to change the institution itself?
So the U.S. has done a number of institutional changes, but they've been largely in response to assaults that have already happened, supporting victims and prosecuting perpetrators. What they have never done, we still haven't done, is look closely at our culture and figure out what in the world is wrong with military culture that allows or causes this level of sexual violence against women and men. So I don't want to... It is predominantly against women, but because of the large numbers of men, much more larger, the actual gross numbers of men who are sexually assaulted is as high as women. Because of the women are only about less than 20% of the military in the U.S., which is actually higher than the Australian Defense Force. So the numbers are high, and we have not tackled the culture. And I think the culture begins at that entry-level training when soldiers go through boot camp. And we have this kind of iconic notion of what boot camp looks like. And really, it's this hazing and harassment
quite
and
violent,
abuse.
Isn't it?
It's very violent and it's very sexist. It's often laden with anti-women and anti-homosexual language and treatment and behavior. And that's like the very beginning training or indoctrination that soldiers get when they join, soldiers or sailors. And certainly Marines get when they join the military. And so nobody has gone after that kind of iconic boot camp to say, this might be the place we need to start looking. This might be what we have to change.
And Megan, in Australia as well, do you see the same need to change at that level?
Yes, I do. And I also think for Australia, I think our biggest problem is data, quite frankly. I think we need more information about what is actually happening. We need some transparency around it, not only the incidents it reports, but also the anonymous surveys that happen and we know happen with the ADF. But they're very difficult to access. And it's important so that we can kind of keep track of the scope of the problem. And for me, it's not just the data. I think in some ways, as a scholar, I think those focused on feminist issues have left the military alone. I think we focused on Me Too in various different institutions and sexual assault in different institutions and not tackled the military, either because we see them as exceptional or I'm not sure why that is, but I think it's a major global problem. It's not just an ADF problem. It's not just a US problem. It's actually a global problem. And I think we need to treat it that way.
Megan McKenzie, Ellen Haring, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Professor of Gender and War at the University of Sydney, Megan McKenzie, and retired US Army Colonel, Dr. Ellen Haring, who is also CEO of Service Women's Action Network.